And so the only person protecting you, the listener, fan of the Charlotte Hornets, fan of the Milwaukee Bucks, fan of the Toronto Raptors, most of these teams, you're going to be looking like the knock on baseball is that the only teams that matter are the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers. And it's like, if you want to watch a league like that, fine. But this is an opportunity here where Adam Silver can step up and pull that lever and come down hard on this guy for clearly, again, I have to say allegedly so I don't get sued, but clearly, allegedly, bullshit. You know? Mm-hmm. But that's why I get so heated about this shit. That's why I keep on tweeting about it. That's why also it touches like every part of society because we're like access journalism matters here in that like ESPN hasn't really said anything, done anything about it. And they just happened to get the Ballmer interview and it's like league partners too. And there's the, like if Shams was still at the Athletic, would he have covered this by now? Would he have like, you know, done anything, you know, given how plugged in we all know he is, he hasn't touched this thing either. It's just, there's a lot going on here. But to me, the biggest thing is I hate the idea of the sixth richest man in the world being able to just come in and wreak havoc on the league and there being no punishment as people just pretend like this is just circumstantial evidence.
What do you think about Cuban coming in with his Captain Save-A-Ho bullshit, Team Ballmer, and all of that?
Well, right? All right.
Like, go ahead.
We got a super comment, so I'm going to play the most important clip on the thing. All right, so BG the Kid. Exactly.
It's water.
Cheers,
sir.
I wish
it weren't.
I wish it wasn't. I wish I had something stronger next to me.
Oh, what's up? Right on, BG the Kid. He's on top of it. Nice.
Yeah. So BG the Kid. Sup, Anthony and Pete. Just tuning in now. But what the fuck was that Mark Cuban interview? That was some shameless stuff by him. It literally made no sense what he was saying. It felt insulting to listen to. Pete, I found myself wondering if he'd actually listened to the pod.
Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. while I was like listening to him go back and forth with Pablo Torre on it, my honest guess is that he had only seen the like 2 or 3 minute
Twitter clip type thing,
Twitter mm-hmm. clip, mm-hmm. and was responding to that. Because a lot of the questions that Mark Cuban was asking were answered in the pod. But Mark Cuban's general premise essentially was that like, there's no way Steve Ballmer is dumb enough to make it this obvious that they were committing cap circumvention. And his basis for it is because Steve Ballmer is the whatever wealthiest man in
this
the
is,
world.
This is they do Go this all the time. Just because you're brilliant in one aspect of something doesn't mean you can be a complete dumbass in something else. Look at fucking Elon Musk, the richest person in the world.
Yeah.
You don't think that man's a dumbass in certain ways? He shows it every fucking day on his Twitter account, right?
Yeah.
And so just because like, oh, he'd never be dumb enough to commit. It's like, no, when you have that much money, you know how brazenly open you can be with your shit?
And that's not no, have Pete, any I'll expand on that point. Like, that's a very important point. When you become as rich as Steve Ballmer is, as Elon Musk is everybody like at that level,
what's
you're
the
surrounded by enablers.
What's the phrase for that level of money?
Filthy.
Fuck you money is what it's called.
Yeah, that right? too.
It's always been called fuck you money because you have so much money. You can tell everybody who doesn't like whatever it is that you're doing. Fuck you. Sorry for all the cursing on this one.
Honestly, like this is the kind of pod I knew what it was. I literally the text I sent to you before this was like, I'm so fired up to talk about this. So I knew the F words and all that stuff was going to fly. So like, apologies to your kids.
So the idea that like they're covering their tracks, like first off, Pablo Torre, freaking great job.
Yes.
It's such a breath of fresh air. Somebody to actually like do their fucking job as a journalist and look into shit and not have to be worried about your access or anything like that and just like go do that. But like, go ahead.
No. There was a but it, you know, or I don't know if there was a but no, I essentially like Mark Cuban kept on coming back to this point of like, I like Ballmer. Also, by the way, you know, there's a decent chance that he's going to have to do business with Ballmer because their paths cross a lot. So like there's probably some stuff going on there as far as things he wasn't willing to say.
The problem with Mark Cuban's defense of Steve Ballmer, and actually Pablo pointed it out, was that you keep talking about this from the perspective of things, mistakes you wouldn't make, mm-hmm. right? Things that you wouldn't do, things, the ways that you would protect yourself. And like that, so my dad is, he retired. He was an engineer. And a lot of these tech bro guys, right? Engineers, mm-hmm. software developers, all this stuff. A lot of times, one of the fallacies that they are very, and everybody is, but I think in this particular, wavelength in terms of brain length or whatever, is that there's an over evaluation of anecdotal evidence. Your experiences are more mm-hmm. important than what is scientifically or what is otherwise out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that basically that notion, that issue that exists within a lot of tech bro brains, is what we saw on display in that podcast with Mark Cuban and Pablo Torre, where he is being told time after time after time after time, here's this evidence, here's this evidence, here's this evidence, here's this evidence. But the only evidence that ever mattered to Mark Cuban is how he would have handled that situation and how he thinks Steve Ballmer is going to handle that situation, simply because Steve Ballmer is richer than he is. Mm-hmm. And
that doesn't stand up to scrutiny. It doesn't stand up to, like, this is part of the reason why, like, I've always felt so compelled toward film. Has been, it's like, yo, we can talk our bullshit, and I'm a podcaster, right? I participate in this plenty, right? But like, you can go back and just watch what actually happened. Like, the truth matters. What tangibly happened matters, not your feelings, not your, oh, well, I would have. Like, there's a reason there's documentation for this sort of stuff. And so, yeah, like that. But when that type of argument is made by somebody with money, and it comes with a level of credibility, right? Like, we end up doing the same thing. It's like, oh, well, all of these very wealthy people, they share this opinion. It's like, no, they're covering each other. And there's plenty of places where Mark Cuban would has cut corners in his life or made a stupid decision. He'd be the first person to tell you all of that. But like, this whole idea of like, oh, they would never do something dumb. That's not how the world works at all. Even with the smartest, wealthiest people, that's just not how it is.
Well, I would argue that the more money you have, given the advantages that Steve Ballmer has in this NBA atmosphere, he is made to, like, his reputation is on the line in the NBA in ways that, like, less wealthy owners' reputations aren't necessarily. And that, like, he has been, with everything that he has been, hands-on, those projects, those companies, those entities have always done astonishingly well. Mm-hmm. And in those worlds, especially when you are as wealthy or as powerful as Steve Ballmer or Microsoft was, you can basically bully your way through to success. Mm-hmm. You can't do that in a world where you're competing against other billionaires, and when there are cap rules, and when they're, when these things are so clearly outlined, what you can and cannot, should or should not be doing. And I think that, like, one of the lines, I was trying to find it in the clips from the show, but one of the things that Steve Ballmer said to me last night was, or not to me, said last night, stuck out to me like crazy, was, whether or not I agree with the cap rules, I still have to abide them. And I was like, why note that?
Mm-hmm. I really want to break this rule. Just letting you know, I really want to not follow this rule, but I will.
Like, yeah. And that was the thing. It was like, it stuck out to me. Did you ever watch the show Silicon Valley?
No.
Oh, it's a great show.
This is a thing. People always ask, have you ever watched Billion and what are all these fucking shows, like, about rich assholes? Yeah. Everybody asks me, like, you ever watch these shows about rich assholes? It's like, no, I pay attention to reality. If you like follow actual current events, you get plenty. Anyway.
Well, sorry, I have to watch those shows because, like, I have to laugh at it. Right. I'm the kind of person who laughs at the train as it runs them over. Like, that's just, I have to laugh at this shit. because otherwise I drive myself nuts. But anyway, in Silicon Valley, essentially the premise is this like really, really, really small startup with a truly revolutionary idea. This guy who has this idea, is kind of up against Google, right? Or another one of these tech giants.
Big bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the show, it's called Hooli. The big company is called Hooli. So the CEO of Hooli is this incredible TV villain, mm-hmm. but he's incredible in how astonishingly stupid he is. And, okay. and it, the show he's does the such CEO? A great, yeah. Yeah. And the reason that I say this and the reason that I use him as an example here is because it's such a great example of nobody ever telling him no. He has a literal like spiritual advisor who never advises him. Mm-hmm. Like this guy,
he's trying to keep his gig. I get paid. Yeah. Probably a right. lot. So like, how does he keep his power? How does this guy like maintain if he's kind of this bumbling idiot? Why
by having power?
Yeah.
He keeps his power by having power. Power is power, right? That's one of the main lessons from Game of Thrones, right? Mm-hmm. Where Cersei tells was it Ned or was it one of the characters? But she says like, arrest him, kill him, don't kill him, mm-hmm. let him go, right? And she's telling her like private guard to do that to this person, and she's like
showing off.
You ask me what is power. Power is power, mm-hmm. And for somebody like Ballmer, who probably really, really loves Ayn Rand, that's the way that he lives. Uh-huh. Right. Like that's the way that guy exists. And the fact that the fact that he noted whether or not I agree with the cap rules, I still have to follow them. He's like, it would be so easy.
How many people wish they were the sixth richest person on the planet? Like what percentage of the 8 billion people walking this earth do you think a goal would be to have as much money as possible? Like 90? Yeah. And so to get to number 6 out of 8 billion, what do you think are some of the things you have to do or believe or like, is it just your sheer brilliance? I'm sure. Yes. Everything you touch turns to gold because you're fucking King Midas, right? And you're this. No. The way that most of these people, like there are a lot of gray area. There are a lot of KL2 Aspire LLCs out there that help facilitate getting some shit done that got something bigger done that like, and this is just the nature of life, right? I'm not even really fighting it. If you haven't agreed upon like framework, we're going to operate within this framework like you do within the NBA, then yeah, you got to follow it. But just from a broader perspective, like, I don't know, man, my family
there came are walks up- of life where there aren't where that isn't outlined. And that's right. Where these people succeed.
Yeah.
That's the thing is that like that's why I want him punished so badly. And frankly, that's why I want him out of the league. Because he's bringing that approach to those walks of life into the NBA. I don't want an NBA where Steve Ballmer can operate in it or thinks that he can operate that way in. Okay. That's not safe to me. That's not the league that I grew up rooting for. And look, like more and more billionaires are getting there, and maybe those guys will hold each other kind of accountable
what they tend to do when they get together. Yeah.
No. But when they compete against each other, mm-hmm. That's at least the notion of the free market. We all know that it isn't a free market. Like that I'm not a child, but at least the notion behind the free market or the notion behind, market competition is that at least in this example in the NBA, where it is so direct as Steve Ballmer's Clippers against Mark Walters' Lakers. Mm-hmm. I do think in that world, Mark Walters' resources can kind of maintain a level playing field with Steve Ballmer. But there are only so many owners who can operate at that height.
Absolutely.
And there are 30 teams.
To that point, did you see Mannix's tweet about this, about kind of the information he'd been getting? Basically, he said that owners and people, they've been talking amongst themselves. Their core complaint of if this is true, it's like, where is my revenue with my rev share check, right? You're circumventing, that's their main, well, not their main concern, but that was the thing he was communicating, was like, there's $50 million. Some of that should be my money because Clippers are a salary tax, luxury taxpayer or whatever. And my team gets those checks and you're circumventing that. So it's not even the like competitive spirit of the league or the cap. It's like, what the fuck's my money, right? So you make a good point that when you get these guys together and they're competing against each other, they're going to scratch and claw for everything they can get. Yeah, they'll be motivated to push back against that. But so, but your closet better be pretty fucking clean itself, right? That's why I say I wonder how much is in the gray area of, and I don't know, but of NBA basketball and money. And I think it's all being figured out on the fly to a certain degree in a new world.
Well, especially as there's so much more money entering the conversation.
New circumstances, yeah.
You know, yeah. And actually with the salaries reaching the heights that they are, I kind of feel like they could do away with the extracurricular stuff. Like the guys who are going to get sponsors, you can get sponsors. It's not hard. This show gets
following,
sponsored.
I'm not following what you're saying.
Well, so essentially again, you know, the thing that is legal for a team to do is to talk to their a sponsor of that team.
Oh, and they introduce them and
They can introduce them to a player and then they can wash their hands and walk away. Right. And like that kind of stuff happens all the time. Most recently, El Pollo Loco, I believe, sponsors the Lakers. Dalton Connect got an El Pollo Loco sponsorship, right? Like that's something that's a relationship that I'm not saying definitely was, you know, started by the Lakers and El Pollo Loco and passed along or whatever. But
are you a sponsor? I don't remember them as a
sponsor. I'm pretty sure they are. Maybe. I don't know. I've seen their commercials on Spectrum broadcasts. Okay. So, like that is that it, like you'll see it, you know, Lemon Daddy, right? Or like those kinds of things where, you know, the team can facilitate that. And I'm kind of wondering if the salaries that are being like the amounts of money that these guys are making in the NBA nowadays, if that number is getting so high or those numbers are getting so high that maybe it makes sense to just put an end to that ambiguity just so that we don't have like, cause that is the only way to do away with this specific situation.
I'm going to add a tangential story just from experience that I hope you're at least finding interesting. So I'd say about 20% of my time when I worked for the Lakers was dedicated to working on corporate partnership projects. And a lot of times it was like video mixes, things like that, that they would buy one or two a month and they'd have to get produced, right? And so one, for example, Beyond Meat was, or still is, I think, a partner of theirs. And it was like Above and Beyond Plays of the Month type of thing, right?
Yeah.
When we made videos or any content that were sponsored by a partner of the Lakers, we could not prominently feature at all LeBron or AD in those. Mm. Because they had negotiated within their contracts, like, no, I'm LeBron James. I'm a brand in and of itself. You can't be like, yeah, this is a Lakers bit of content in which LeBron James like is like the main character in it. Yeah. And then LeBron doesn't get money out of it. Right. And so if it were part of a team thing, you could show it like one play here or there, and then you'd have to get it approved type of thing. But what had happened was at the last year that I had that I worked there, was the NBA Players Association started kind of picking up on, this is true about all of us, right? So if you're getting sponsored for this Beyond Meat video and you're getting money to the team for this one per month type of video, and it's got
that is BRI technically.
That's right. It's Austin and Rui and all of these Laker players in them. Should we not, as the Players Association, should we not be getting part of this? Right. And so it became sort of, I forget what the resolution was, but I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that all of this is like being figured out on the fly, even when it's not people cheating or trying to gray out the rules or anything like that. It's just that there's a lot of these circumstances that it's like, what is this worth? How should we handle this? I don't know. Let's figure it out over the course of time. And that's just an example of it.
Well, or even you think about it, like if a team has an official Twitter account and that team gets money from Twitter for the engagement that it generates. Is that BRI? Because those highlights, those highlight reels and moments with those players, like that's probably how they're generating a lot of that engagement. Uh-huh. Is that something that players should get? Whatever it is, I think it's like 49 or 48% of. Like, that's
this is an argument I would make when I was with there. Like, we should be cranking up YouTube because that's the one platform that's actually going to give you money on the other end of it. And so, and they're killing it this year. I love what the Lakers are doing with their YouTube channel this year, and they're doing a lot more. And it's like, yeah, there's going to be money at the other end of that. Who does that belong to? Like, I don't know.
I mean, does that go to the marketing team? Does the marketing team have to split that with the team? Like,
are the players entitled to some of that? Like you said, you know?
Yeah. But again, though, like these are all things that, that's a conversation that can take place in the forefront. That's not a back room. This is it. The problem with this, right, is how back channeled this is. The Kawhi situation is what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like the reason that it has gone as viral as it has, and this is extended, by the way, beyond Twitter. This is extended like to where my in-laws are asking me about this.
Situation. Oh, has
hey, what nice. Did what did the Clippers do here? What's up with this? And I was like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. But so like the reason that I think this has taken hold the way that it has is because like nobody would care, Pete, if Kawhi Leonard had just sent an aspiration tweet. Nobody would care. Saying,
what did he do for that money?
Yeah, no, like nobody would care if he had retweeted it at some point, if he had liked a tweet from them at some point, if he had done made any interaction with them Shameless, at any man. Point, it would be over. This would not be a story. And mm-hmm. the reason that this has taken hold the way that it has is because everybody's sitting here and look, like, again, this is why so many people around the league are paying such close attention to the punishment and the investigation here, is because they're like, right. That was an option?
Right. This How do we get BBGO to subsidize Austin's next contract? That's my question.
Well, look, if you're the Lakers and you have access to the number of sponsors that the Lakers have access to, mm-hmm. and... like, so this year specifically, right, Pete, the Lakers are what, like $1.4 million up against the first apron and they're hard capped at the first apron, mm-hmm. right? How much easier would life be if you only paid, you know, LeBron or whoever, you know, so like mm-hmm. $7 million less and made up for it with an Aspirations LLC sponsorship?
Isn't this part of like the NIL thing that's going on right now?
Yes, exactly.
Same thing's going on. Is this kid's getting from this car dealership some crazy out of market deal? And I do think that I believe that's one of the rules too, right? Is that like endorsement deals have to be market value.
Yes, that's why I bring up that's a very important term.
That's why I bring up like Drake and Robert Downey Jr. and all of these. It's like, well, what were they making?
Yeah.
Now, what was Kawhi making from this very same company? These bigger stars are doing more, right? What was he getting paid to do?
Well, they combined, those other celebrities combined made a fraction of what Kawhi was getting from that company. Again, according to Pablo and all that stuff. And that, again, that market value of it, the guys on Hoop Collective today were talking about shoe endorsement deals and how you have to be like a megastar to get $7 million a year from your shoe company. Like you have to be a really good player. You have to have basically your own shoe is how you get, you know, $7 million. Most endorsement deals, especially if it's just to endorse a product, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? The DeAndre Jordan situation there with the Lexus dealership, that was for $200,000 a year. This is for $7 million. And that's, by the way, so according to John Corrales of Locked On Celtics and then the Boston Sports Journal, they were able to unearth that Kawhi's deal was actually for $48 million.
And Pablo reconfirmed that with his own. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Which, by the way, boy, it is so nice to see people like confirming reporting and uh-huh. working off of reporting. Journalism. From other, like, oh, it I is just, it. It's so nice. Like,
it was so important.
Look at that. I missed ethical. Those days. And I like this is where I'm gonna nerd out for a second, Pete, because grifters wouldn't exist if NBA journalists actually operated ethically. The RAs of the world wouldn't exist if NBA journalists would confirm each other's reporting and mention that there are in fact other journalists working in the
nobody else is doing this kind of reporting though, Anthony. Like, here's the thing: a lot of those journalists, right, that we've got our fingers wagging at and whatnot, like,
yeah,
they rely on access to be able to, right? They have to be able to go back the next day into the scrum and into that building and all that. And you better be, like, so for something like this, Pablo Torre brought out 3,000 plus pages of evidence, right? It's hard to, not everybody ends up filing bankruptcy. You don't have a paper trail like this for everything you see, read, or hear. Lord knows you know that, Anthony, right? Like, that a lot of what you could report or could confirm, right? And so the vast majority of the time, it becomes a calculation for the reporter, even somebody that's operating in good faith, that isn't not operating ethically. It's just not worth it, man. It's not worth the calculation, you know?
You also, so there's two things at play there. One, the access, like you're talking about, absolutely agree. I can't tell you the number of times I've had other journalists say to me, like, I can't believe you say the shit about the Lakers that you say and can still report stuff. That is actually insane. Like, you know, so there's that going on. But I also think, so I was talking to somebody about this world of reporting, news brokerage and stuff like that, right? And one of the things that they kind of asked is like, why does ESPN, why did Woj make the amount of money that he made at ESPN? And then why did they immediately have to go and hire Shams after Woj was gone? Mm-hmm. And my response was, well, because those guys at that level, they dictate reality. They, to a lot of NBA fans out there, those people, like, it's not real until Shams tweets it. And that's what's been so interesting about this situation, where Shams basically hasn't tweeted about it. He tweeted the Clippers response or whatever. He hasn't tweeted about it. He hasn't reported on it. He hasn't done a SportsCenter hit, nothing. He hasn't said anything about this. And yet, Pete, it's reality. This really happened.
Anything about it?
What's that?
Why do you think he hasn't said anything about it?
The easy answer is he doesn't want to lose his connections with the Clippers. He doesn't want to lose his connections. Like, agents are monitoring this really closely, right? Because of those backroom deals that a lot of their clients benefit from, and they also benefit from. I think that's a part of it. That's the easy thing. But to me, Pete, my theory is that he isn't reporting on it because he didn't break it first. He does not acknowledge stories that other people break. I remember this distinctly when I reported that the Lakers were going to hire or had already come to an agreement with JJ Redick, and how he was on Pat McAfee that day. And he was like, yeah, come on, I haven't heard that. And then you come to find out later, it's like, actually, yeah. Not only was JJ eventually hired, but a lot of the stories that people told about the way that he was hired, it came to confirm my timeline, not his, not Woj's. Mm-hmm. And yet he had to dodge raindrops basically to try to make it seem as if he had the correct story. He had the true story. And that was what was really interesting about the Dan Hurley situation, was because Woj had to pretend that he had the true story, and Shams had to pretend he had the story. And NBA fans are in the middle sitting like, dads are arguing.
Well, one thing too is that, like, almost very few times do you have the whole story, right? I think a lot of times
almost
people
never
expect newsbreakers to be able to tell. Like, I know for a fact that Woj and Bob Hurley Sr. go back, like, Woj goes back with the Hurley family ages and decades, right? So the idea that Woj was getting good information from them, like, that sounds totally
plausible,
mm-hmm. right? I know that was one of the few people that Pelinka would talk to.
So does, by the way, Woj doing that family a favor, but Go that, on.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Talk about somebody transactional and transactional media. Woj knew how to play the game better than anybody.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that the whole thing has changed, frankly, since he's retired in a lot of ways. Sorry, we're off
no,
track.
No, no. I think this is an important part of it, Pete, is that like that's what makes this story so fascinating to me. And I know we're up against it time wise. We've just now passed an hour, so I'm not going to keep you for too much longer. But the reporting, the coverage on this, like, this is why when people go on and on and on about how much journalism matters, speaking truth to power, mm-hmm. bringing the Steve Ballmers out into the light and making them answer for a verifiably true story. That's why that shit matters. That's why I get so heated about the way that the league is covered and how unethical NBA coverage has become. In Major League Baseball, Pete, they confirm each other all the time. Football, they confirm each other all the time. But the reason there are so many NBA-specific grifters is because there is no confirmation. It just doesn't happen. I think the only time I've ever been confirmed was when I broke that D'Angelo Russell was coming off of the bench, and Wojcie confirmed me. And I thought, I was like, holy shit, that's a thing? We do that? Or y'all do that? And shouts to Wojcie for confirming it. That was really cool to see. And over the course of the last week or so, with the story nobody else had, everybody has had to say Pablo Torre alleges this and has broken this and reported this and all that stuff. You have to do that because nobody else was talking about it before Pablo did. So you can't even, like, there's a lot of people who go out and they pretend that they had this thing that they didn't. And then they'll say, like, yes, I can confirm this or that. You couldn't. It's fine. You don't get every story. I don't get every story. That's why, like, the one time that I confirmed that the Lakers were buying the pick, the first pick that they bought, the first time that they bought it this last second round of the draft, I had literally messaged Clutch Points in the Discord there. I was like, yeah, I'm hearing that the Lakers are about to buy a pick. And I was like, I'm going to take a shower and I'll write about it really quick. And in the time that I was, I fucking in the shower, Shams was like,
rookie move.
Yeah,
rookie
I fucked move, up. I screwed up. But like, while I was in the shower, Shams, you know, tweets out the Lakers are about to buy the 55th pick. And I was like, shit. And then, so I say, I can confirm Shams's report that the Lakers are getting. And immediately people jump to, oh, I can confirm it too. I saw it on Twitter. And it's like, no, but I actually can. That's mm-hmm. the thing here. I actually can. And if there was more of that going on, if covering the NBA was more ethical, we would get more stories like this week. We would actually get more hardline reporting. But with SEO becoming as important as it is, and clicks and transactional journalism and journalism on transactions, like that's the part of it that has really kind of made it so that this story sticks out as uniquely as it has. And I think that's a bit of a bummer.
It is. And this phenomenon that you're explaining exists in more important areas than sports too.
Oh yeah.
You know, and yeah, it's part of the reason.
Great point to make.
And it's, yeah, this is our escape, but it's also a microcosm of the larger society that we live in. And so, yeah, been fun talking with you about this, man.
Yep, absolutely. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of the Lakers Lounge Podcast. Thank you to Pete. Make sure you guys are checking out the LFR pod. Their pods have been excellent. The Palinka pods that you guys did were very, very good. So make sure you guys are tuned in to the LFR pod. We will be back again on Sunday with a mailbag. So get your questions in the form of a 5-star review, and I'll get to them then. And until then, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And we'll talk to you on Sunday. Have a good one, everybody.